Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and this morning's conversation with Norman Bowles, Program Director of the FAA Logistics Center in Oklahoma City. Joining us on our conversation also from PwC is John Kaminsky.
Norman, you told us a little bit about the kinds of changes that occurred at the FAA Logistics Center. How did that affect the rest of the FAA?
A number of different ways. Let me just talk about the one about the giving away our money, though, first. The best way to describe it is what we had was a free issue system, meaning if somebody in the air traffic control system needed a part, all they had to do was call us and get a free part. DOD used to use one of that kind of a system, and they eventually got rid of it. They described it as a communistic system, and they had a hard time figuring out how they could fight the Cold War using a communistic system. So the last vestiges of free issue disappeared in DOD in the last 20 years. I personally believe that the free issue system was part of FAA's problem in modernizing the air traffic control system. The FAA has got many really dedicated and talented people, and so the people in the field, the 6,000 people in the field who repair the air traffic control system, can fix just about anything. The people in the logistics center can fix any part, no matter how old it is. And so when the agency would start running short on funds and they would say, well, we'd like to delay the modernization of something, of a particular system, they would go out to the field and they'd say, well, what would the effect be if we delay the implementation or the replacement of this? The people in the field would come to us and they would say, what's the effect? Are you going to be able to support us with this old equipment? Our answer would be, yes, of course we can. And then their answer to the headquarters is say, well, there's no impact. Over the long period of time, that began, I believe, to have an effect, a negative effect. When we started charging people for parts, all of a sudden the people in the field were able to connect their labor with the parts and the cost of the parts. If you're a technician and your job is to repair things and somebody keeps you with the free parts, that's fine. But when you start seeing what the cost of those parts are as a taxpayer is when you start to have your reaction. And so there's been a lot of changes in the field in terms of the behavior.
Can you give an example of that?
Oh, I can give you a number of examples. One of the problems that the agency was running into was that because there would be repeated cuts of various programs, projects for implementing or deploying new systems would start to run out of money towards the end of those programs. At that time, the people who are doing the installation of the new facilities would turn to their operational counterparts in the field and would say, we're out of money, can you get parts? And so they would come to the logistics center, they would order the parts were free, we'd send them the parts, and the facility would get completed. Now, there was a hidden subsidy there because the operational capabilities of the and dollars of the agency were being drained by the lack of funding on the implementation side. The first time that the people in the field had to pay for those parts, the first time that somebody came to them and says, we don't have enough money to finish this facility, the person in the field said, I'm sorry, this is my money. I'm not going to finish this project for you. That's your problem. That created a crisis within the agency that quickly got resolved, and as a result, these facilities now have enough money to be finished. It used to be that when you were in the field, if you needed a part, and since the performance of the logistics center was a little bit uncertain, if you needed a part, you might order three. What happened is when we started, or you didn't know what the value of a part was, and so you might take an extra part, you might store it, and then later on you need another part, you might order another one. When people started having to pay for their parts, all of a sudden they started ordering only one, or if they were going to order one and they realized they had one on the shelf, they might use that one instead. The first 2 years, the demand for the traditional parts dropped something like 30%. There were a lot of decisions that were being made when parts were free, when somebody would say, well, I've got this radio, I need to have it repaired, and they'd send it to the logistics center to be repaired because that was free, because they couldn't see what the cost of that was. However, when we started charging them, what they saw is it cost $2,000 to repair a radio that you could buy a brand new one for $400. I got a call from one of our top customers in Washington, D.C. He says, Norman, is it true that you can order, you'll carry different things now that we're paying for these parts? My answer was yes. He says, well, you know, we're noticing that this particular monitor for this radar system costs $28,000 to repair. It's a black and white. And we noticed that there's a $7,000 color monitor that the air traffic controllers like better. Can you start carrying that? Well, in the past, that organization would not order new equipment because that was the job of the acquisition side of the FAA. But all of a sudden, they were able to see what the real cost of it was, and it makes a lot more sense to buy a brand new one than pay $28,000 for a repair. So rather than waiting for the acquisition side, the operations side was now beginning to modernize the air traffic control system. There are all sorts of examples where people couldn't see obsolescence within the air traffic control system. But today, there's a particular radar that's got just six parts that have gone up and cost $1 million in the last 2 years. And in the past, that would have been invisible, so the agency wouldn't be able to deal with it. The logistics center might know, but unless anybody was really paying attention to what we were saying, that might not get addressed. Now there are 6,000 people in the field who can see those obsolescence costs, and so the agency now is getting a lot better at being able to address those. It really is a fundamental systems change, and what's really powerful about it is not one that requires top management direction. It's a systems change that just alters behavior because it's a fundamental paradigm shift.
In the last segment, you talked about the period of change that has taken place during your tenure, and I'm curious, normally employees resist change in these kind of periods. How did you incent the employees to facilitate the change?
Actually, first of all, I don't believe that people consciously resist change. All of us deal with change every single day in our lives. If you bought a computer and it's a brand new computer, 1 year from now it's going to be obsolete. And car models change on us, and food products change on us, and our favorite television shows change. People really aren't resistant to change. I think it's a lot of times it's the system itself, or people are not motivated to, or they can't see why there's a need for a change. In our case, we've got two programs that we're particularly proud of. One of them is an informal award system where it involves a recognition of less than $50. We partnered with an employee association store to carry something like 50 different items and all of the same value. And we have coupons that we give out to our workforce when they do things right. And we try to give out about 10% of those coupons a month. This is to reward risk-taking, innovation, those kinds of things. This year, we were moving something like 300 of our employees from one building to another. Our performance levels were really, really high, and we really wanted to get our workforce to focus on specific goals of maintaining the quality level, the responsiveness that we have, and at the same time try to break even. So we came up with a program where we offered our employees $500, a bonus of $500 apiece at the end of the year if we hit these four targets. We told the union we definitely wanted to be able to pay out, and so we worked with the union to get the performance standards into every one single employee's performance standards. So they were all tied to those goals, and each person had their specific tasks. If they did it and they all added up and we all achieved it, we would get that bonus. We came very close. We gave out $350 in bonuses to every single employee this past year. That cost us a couple $100,000. But we would have been willing to pay millions to get that kind of performance in the first place. It worked really well. In fact, we're going to do it again this year. Our workforce responded very well to it. It helped them stay focused, and it gave them a sense that they know where they fit in the mission of the logistics center, and it gave them an opportunity to believe that they can make a difference.
We know the center became ISO 9000 certified. Why was that important?
It was a number of things. Number one is ISO 9000 is the international standard of quality. It's a very rigorous standard. It's not something that you just get. It's actually a certification. You get audited every 6 months. While we're making all of these changes, it was a difficult enough process that tied everybody in the organization to the same thing. And this allowed us to make a lot of other changes while they were all focusing on the ISO 9000. The other thing is if you really want to be able to turn on a dime and make a lot of changes on a continuous basis, the difficult thing is keeping quality. It's because you've got some things that are working and then you're going to make another change, and it's going to affect those things that are working. ISO 9000 actually is a very good platform for that because it documents everything that you do. When you start making a change, you document those as well. Now you know what the effects of that, and you can trace the effect of that change throughout the whole organization. We have one organization, the item managers, that in the last several years made 600 changes to their work instructions. 600 different changes. And ISO 9000 lets us know exactly where we made a mistake. You can do something that will show up 6 months later in your quality, and with ISO 9000, you can trace it back to when you made that change. So it's a phenomenal tool. We really exported that throughout the FAA. Half a dozen FAA organizations have now adopted ISO 9000.
Well, that's a good stopping point. Rejoin us after the break as we continue our conversation with Norman Bowles of the FAA Logistics Center. This is the Business of Government Hour.